Shakespeare's All's Well That Ends Well is in repertory at the Delacorte Theater this summer with Measure for Measure. It's running through July 30th, and joining me now are its director, Daniel Sullivan, and John Cullum, who plays the King of France. Pleased to welcome them both to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Now, this is a play that I haven't seen all that much in recent years, whereas certain other plays by Shakespeare get performed again and again. Yeah. Is it particularly difficult to stage, Daniel?
It's not easy, but a lot of people think they have seen it, I find. You go, I love that play. But they're actually talking about As You Like It, probably, or something else. It's tonally difficult, I think, because it's a fairly dark play and yet a comedy. So
almost like Merchant of Venice in a lot of ways. Both there are comic aspects and very dark play.
Yes, I think that's true.
And there are even other parallels, which we might discuss later.
Right. I think that, you know, it's not as angry a play, shall we say, as Merchant of Venice, and not as bloodthirsty a play.
Helena, who is played by Annie Paris, is very strong-willed, very much in love with Bertram, the son of the countess who protects Helena. When the play opens, has she determined that she wants to marry him?
I think that she feels it's fated, that somehow their relationship is going to happen. She just has to find a way to make it happen.
Is her relentless pursuit of her goal and her intelligence one of the reasons some have called her character one of Shakespeare's most feminist characters?
Well, she doesn't take no for an answer, let's put it that way.
John, the King of France, played by you. Is this the second time you played the King of France?
That's right. I played it about 44 years ago. When I was the young King of France, young and handsome, and in King Lear, and I married Cordelia. And then I got out of it. Then I was gone. And this play...
Are you starting to understand what it means to be a king?
Well, do I... What? What was the question?
Is this something... Are you starting to feel comfortable in being a king?
In this one, I'm dying at the very beginning, and I get resurrected by Helena. So it goes uphill, so to speak.
Your character pressures Bertram, the object of Helena's affections, to marry her. Does he think that this is a match made in heaven, or as a king, does he just want to be obeyed?
Yes, I think so. Is that a good evasion of the question?
Yes and yes.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think he thinks he's getting things done when he's not really getting things. Things are taking their course, whether he does anything about it or not. He rants and raves, and he gets well, and he makes Bertram marry Helena, but that doesn't really accomplish much.
Well, Daniel, Helena is a sympathetic character, so audiences kind of side with it. They have no idea why Bertram is so much against marrying this woman.
Yes,
we all want to marry her.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, the king makes a deal with Helena that if she cures him, then he will let her marry whoever she wants to. So it's sort of payment for what she's done. But Bertram isn't involved in that, so he doesn't have a choice.
But Bertram Bertram of suggests that this is a class thing.
Yes, but...
She's a physician's daughter, not worthy of him.
It may be hard to identify with Bertram, but I think you can identify with his dilemma. The king says, you have to marry this person. Mm-hmm. It takes it away from him. So I think the fact that he has a negative response to that is very understandable.
The scene shifts.
I want to ask Dan a question.
So go ahead.
I don't get a chance a lot of times during the rehearsals.
Because he's the king during rehearsal.
Absolutely. I've forgotten the question. Go ahead.
It'll occur to you again. I was going to say.
You can tell that I'm an older king now.
Yeah. Well, you remember your lines quite well.
Yes, he does.
The scene shifts throughout the play, so this is a bit complicated to stage because you don't have 35 different sets.
Yes.
and you've done it brilliantly, but was this something you had to take a long time to work out?
Not really. I think, you know, we came up with basically a unit set so that both both this play and Measure for Measure share the same structure. So it was just finding new ways to deal with what is a very simple idea. And I think out there in the park, you really have to keep all the ideas visually, hopefully elegant, but at the same time, very, very simple.
Well, one of the advantages you have in the park is that Belvedere Castle is right behind.
Yes.
So it almost looks like you built that set.
And gorgeous trees that you can always light up also. So, you know, it's going to be – it was one of the things when we did Merchant of Venice out there, it was very hard to keep it from being beautiful. And then when we moved it to the Broadhurst, we could actually make a much more a much darker, threatening space out of it.
I kind of think the question I wanted to ask Dan was: it seems to me, Dan, that the king uses really good logic in the first part of his speech to Bertram to try to talk him into marrying Helena, mm-hmm. And then of course he uses his power to force the marriage. But it's that at that particular moment in the play, you have, it seemed like a generational gap, but in the sense the old man is much more liberal than the younger guy.
Yeah.
And Dan does an interesting thing as far as I'm concerned. Dan has we have a wonderful choreographer. Dan can speak about that if he wants to.
Well, that's a huge stage, and you do have to choreograph, don't
you? Yes, you do.
And just to keep people moving in a good way?
Exactly.
But I feel that the play, as on the page, doesn't resolve in a very satisfactory way to me, because I have my doubts about Bertram regardless of what he says at the end. But in my opinion, because he starts off with this very lyrical quality of the company, entire company, doing this wonderfully choreographed dance, and then we end up, instead of the way the play ends up, it ends up with a dance in which the two central persons are dancing above the scene, and we're doing a little ritual. It's very, very happy ending type. And did you do that deliberately because you felt – I want to know why you did that.
Well, you know, I thought that basically Helena wins at the end. The question is, what does she win? And what's going to happen to this relationship?
It makes that title ironic, All's Well
exactly.
That Ends Well. But in a way, it's similar to Merchant of Venice at the end of both plays. The leading lady has outsmarted everyone to keep her husband, but you're not sure that this is going to be the happiest of all marriages.
Right, exactly. I think that's true.
And you know, Shakespeare intended that, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. And we are the king in this production. The king is about to perform another marriage, making what looks like maybe the same mistake.
And Shakespeare seems to be playing with the whole idea of what a happy ending is.
Yes.
This is playing with ambiguity. Measure for Measure, this summer's other Shakespeare in the Park play, which will be directed by David S. Bjornson, is considered another problem play, and it's thought to have been written right after All's Well That Ends Well. Was this a period when Shakespeare was playing with the form?
Yes, I think so. And I think also, just in terms of language, both plays are very experimental when it comes to language.
It's very difficult. The language is very difficult for me as an actor because it goes from regular lines to rhyming lines to the lines lines that run around the end of the lines. And you have to be on your toes all the time because you can't just do the regular iambic pentameter beat.
But one of the things I noticed about this production, because I've seen any number of other Shakespearean mm-hmm. productions, is that there's never any confusion about what people are saying. Sometimes I've just felt actors are rushing through and saying, forsooth, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yes.
John, I understood everything you were saying. I don't know if that's because you're just such a brilliant actor or because Daniel also helped you get to that point? Because everybody seems right. to at that be at that point. I assume that's one of your goals in directing these plays.
I think we try to contextualize every scene so that there's sense there to begin with. You know, but this is also quite a wonderful company of actors of extraordinarily articulate.
I'd like to take as much credit as I can for it. But the truth is that Daniel has done a lot of things to make the play work. Daniel is one of the Daniel, in my opinion, works off of intellect and instinct better than almost any director I've ever worked with, and everything continually gets better as we rehearse. I may kid about it and bitch a little bit, but the time that we put in working has resulted in the play changing slightly forms until it gets to a place that Dan wants it. And it's always, I think your instinct is takes over from your intellect in the last run. That's where you really make anything. How does it work out? How is it working for the audience? I don't know where that's
been. Right. Well, I think also it's not just my instincts. It's the instincts of the actors that I depend upon.
And we should mention Reg Rogers.
And Reg, yes.
He plays Parolis, one of Bertram's followers, who brags about his various heroics in battle. And he's one of Shakespeare's great comic characters. And in some ways, like another character that Shakespeare seemed to like certain kinds of themes, he reminds me of Malvolio in A Midsummer Night's Dream. In that...
In Twelfth Night.
Is it Twelfth Night?
Yes,
right. Twelfth Night, where he's locked up and this character is blindfolded. And,
right, exactly.
And we get wonderful plot devices
right.
as a result.
Exactly, exactly.
So do you think about that, how all these Shakespearean plays connect?
Well, it's very, you know, he's actually somewhat closer to Falstaff, I think, as the braggart, you know, someone who is extraordinarily loquacious. I think Reg is quite wonderful in it. And Reg said to me the other day, he says, you know, I love Parolis. You know, I mean, what he meant was that he doesn't want to play him negatively, that he himself embraces the character of Parolis. And I think that's what makes it so rich.
Well, he's a man who's in love with words.
Yes.
And the name Parolis sounds like the Italian word for words.
Yes.
But he is almost like Sylvester the cat.
He'd love that.
Toward the end of the play, John, the king is the one who helps walk the audience through all the twists and turns that have happened in the play. Is that a fun scene to play because everyone is pretty confused, but you're finally explaining it all?
Yeah, it's the one time I feel like I'm in control, not really, because the circumstances are so ridiculous that... But it's fun. It's the most fun scene for me in the play.
Now, directors have to decide. I guess it's the director who decides when to set a Shakespearean play. Mm-hmm. Do you set it in the 17th century, or do you set it in another time? This seems to be somewhere around the time of World War I.
Yes, I think just after we decided. But we're not, you know, we're not slavish about it because... if you start to try to be exact about it, you're going to have all kinds of contradictions. So, it's still a fantasy, you know. And it's not a real thing. But I make the choice about where to set something from some image in the play that, and in this case, it was the curing of the king. It was the medicine itself, how you went about that. And I thought it would be interesting to have something that an audience would understand and identify with. So.
Now, you've done a lot of Shakespeare. There was Twelfth Night 2 years ago in the park, The Merchant of Venice last summer, and then moved to Broadway. But also Good People, Time Stands Still, and now this thing in the park. Mm-hmm. Does it matter whether it's Shakespeare or a contemporary play like Good People?
No. I think certainly for me, I work work the same way, I think. You have to work faster.
Well, you're so busy doing so many different things, you probably have to work even faster than usual.
Right. But the process is the same, I think. You investigate the subject.
I found Shakespeare is a lot like musicals. They're so big and complicated. Yeah.
And you've done your share of musicals, haven't you, John?
And there's so many. You have to deal with so many people on the stage. You don't think about that too much when you're watching it. But the truth is, in contemporary plays, you seldom have to deal with so many people at the same time. Sometimes Shaw. Incidentally, I've seen some great productions in Seattle that Dan directed up there. And they were not Shakespeare.
Right.
But I would think that he works the same way.
You've just recently been in Scottsboro Boys and before that, August Osage County, the Lincoln Center production of Cymbeline. That's an incredible range for an actor. And you did so many musicals over the years.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be a serious actor? Did the music, or was the music something that just came along?
I wanted to be a Shakespearean actor. In fact, I got into the musical comedies because somebody saw me do the chorus in Henry V. And when I auditioned for Camelot against my better judgment, they said, "Can you do something from Shakespeare?" And I said, "What?" And I said, "Sure, I can do almost anything from Shakespeare," because I was pretty arrogant in those days. And that's how I ended up. They wanted an understudy for Richard Burton, and so that's how I ended up in musical comedy.
My guests have been Daniel Sullivan, who's the director of this new production of All's Well That Ends Well. It's a brilliant production at the Delacorte, running through July 30th. And John Cullum, who plays the King of France. It's free, but for more information, you should visit our show page at wnyc.org.